You are listening to Fanfare Tracks.
Because of the following special program, Wonder Woman and the Incredible Hulk will not be presented this evening.
Time to get all your Star Wars news in a single file. This is Making Tracks. Here are your hosts, Mark Newbold and Mark Mulcaster.
That's not true. That's impossible.
You're listening to episode 58 of Making Tracks, brought to you by the fine folk over at fanfaretracks.com. I'm Mark, your co-host, and today I'm joined by my man in the Midlands, and the only man to be kicked out of the Bounty Hunters Guild, Mr. Mark Newbold.
They didn't kick me out, they asked me to leave.
Did they point at the door and just say, would you mind leaving?
Yeah. So rude. But, you know, I took it on the chin like I always do. How are you, Mark?
I'm very well. I was just saying, just as before we hit record, Gattel winter's coming because I'm in my collection room and it's a little bit nippy in here. So I've actually had to put some full trousers on instead of just shorts. But I'm good. How's things with you? How's your week in Star Wars?
It's been full of Star Wars. There's been lots of Star Wars. It's been a good week. There's lots of product out this week. You know, there seems to be lots of General Giant announcements. And obviously we've got New York Comic Con virtually happening. And also Hasbro had their Fan First Friday, their latest Fan First Friday. Funny enough, on Friday. So I'm sure we'll talk about that at some point.
Yep, I think so. In fact, to be fair, I think one of the biggest breaking news items is the Hasbro FanForce Friday. Well, I had a live stream which had a really nice close-up look at the Razor Crest, the forthcoming HasLab product. Did you get a chance to look at that?
Yeah, that's a bit special. It was a brief FanForce Friday, and it, like you say, it was all focused on the HasLab Razor Crest. Blimey, it looks good, doesn't it? I mean, the stuff that's in there, the things that they're planning and thinking of putting into that thing, the detail level's insane. And they gave us a more detailed, like you say, a more detailed look at it than we got before when they announced it.
Mm.
And of course, it's blowing through its stretch goals like crazy at the moment. It went through, well, it needed 6, didn't it? And it reached that in a matter of hours. And then it got to its 8,000 stretch goal, which added the escape hatch. And now it's gone through 10,000, which has added the child in his little cot thing. So that looks
vintage
a bit
card,
that's
yeah.
it. So that looks a bit special. And they've announced that they are going to do a third stretch goal. But if you had the choice, and we don't know what it's going to be, I've got some ideas, but what do you think they might make the third stretch goal be?
I honestly don't know. Although I think some kind of carbonite would be good. Maybe a couple of those bounties he had hanging up in the first chapter. And that would actually quite harken back quite nicely to when you get Slave One, when you get like the Han Solo and carbonite. Something like that, I think. I mean, because it seems like the stretch goal kind of reward, shall we say, are nice items. It's always interesting to see how many people keep stuff like the Baby Yoda carded and how many people are going to crack him out and actually put him in the Razor Crest. We don't really know exactly all the tricks that the Razor Crest can do. You know, we've seen it fly around and stuff, but we don't know if it's got loads of hidden weapons or rockets and stuff like that, because we haven't actually really seen it kind of do a huge amount in the series yet.
I don't know why I thought this, but you saying that, such a good point, is a bit like somebody in 1978 saying, we're going to make the ultimate R2-D2. The ultimate. There'll never be a more accurate, detailed and better R2-D2 than this. In 2002, they release Attack of the Clones, and all of a sudden those little nozzles on the side of his arms turn out to be jets and he can fly.
Exactly.
So, yeah, that's a good point. I mean, we've got Season 2 coming, and there's which is in the can, and the Razor Crest from HasLab won't actually be out till November next year. So, yeah, you're right. There could be stuff that they add as a stretch goal that's relevant to Season 2, but Season 2 hasn't started. It doesn't start for another just under 4 weeks.
No.
So this is still a way away, and I think they're still adding numbers in terms of people purchasing it. Like I say, it's well over 10,000 now, and I don't know where they'll set that next stretch goal. And I mean, they've clearly comfortably, if 6,000 was their break-even point, if you like, and they blew through that in hours, every time they had a stretch goal, it's more cost and more development and more stuff they've got to add. You kind of think, well, if they say, well, the next stretch goal is 15,000, and you're thinking, oh, they're going to get to 15,000 before the November deadline when it all cuts off. But if they do, what would they add? And you could get to that 15,000 stretch goal because I don't know what the limit is on purchasing the Razor Crest. Is it 5 per person or something?
It's 5, yeah, 5 per person.
Yeah, so, you know, there will undoubtedly be people out there buying them and stacking them away for a rainy day because...
Absolutely, yeah.
They said on this live stream, didn't they, we're only doing this once, like the barge, you know, it's not going to retail, we're not going to redo it, that's it. So if you wanted a barge, for example, you really will pay through the nose to get your hands on one. The Razor Crest will be the same, presumably. Yeah, I don't know, you know, you entice people to get to a 15,000 stretch goal, and I love your idea of doing, you know, if they did 2 or 3 carbonite blocks like you saw in the first episode. But there's other things. I mean, there's people talking about them adding lights and sounds to it. Maybe that's an element. You know, you just had the Smuggler's Run Falcon.
True.
Which had different settings, you know, like classic Falcon sounds, but also Galaxy's Edge sounds and stuff. So there's definitely the technology to do that. I don't know what I'd like to see. I mean, I can't wait to see it when it's all chromed up. I think it's going to look amazing.
Yeah, I think so.
Just as a physical piece.
Absolutely. It looks beautiful. Up until really this live stream, we've only seen kind of photos of it in situ by itself, but then when you've actually got the guy coming in and actually removing the panels, yes, you actually start to get an idea of how bloody big this thing is, and it's like, it's immense.
Yes.
So yeah, I mean, actually, that's a good show. Lights and sounds, I mean, because those thrusters always look really cool in the latest ILM video where you see them actually building the Razor Crest. They're using like ring LEDs and stuff like that for the thrusters, so that's something that is quite attainable. You could kind of actually add that fairly easily, I think, to the actual body without actually creating too much extra work. But then that's just it, you know, it's not coming out till next year. They may have already built in some extra stuff which we may not see until, you know, middle of season 2, but will be actually in the final product. They're just not allowed to announce it yet.
Yeah, I mean, I always think back to here we go, me talking about Star Trek, what a shock. The very first episode of Next Generation, and I think, you know, you see the source of separation moment in Encounter at Farpoint. You kind of think now, if they'd redone that now, they'd go, let's save that for like an end of season finale moment. Oh my god, the ship separates, because that was always a thing that they worked into the plans for the original Enterprise, the 60s Enterprise, and they never showed it, and so it's always been there, you know. So but in Encounter at Farpoint, they thought, well, let's show the ship doing the separation thing. My point being is, you know, it's one of those cool things that you could get halfway through the show and go, I never knew it did that. And you make a great point about the Razor Crest, thinking it might do something, or there might be some facility that it's got that you go, I had no idea it could do that. So I'm prepared to be surprised. I like the stretch goals they've done so far. I thought the escape pod was a neat little addition. Is very toyetic as well, is a good Hasbro word. And you know, adding the child, you get the Mando with his soft cape, you can now get the child. Who's going to want to take that off the blister? Nobody's going to want to take it off the blister. Bit like Yak Face in the barge, you know, just looks too cool on the card. Great stuff. It's looking fantastic. I think people are going to flip for it when it comes out. But yeah, I'm very curious. I think they're going to announce it this week, so hopefully by next episode we'll have a bit more info. But sounds like we'll find out what the extra stretch goal is going to be.
Maybe it's a working vac tube.
Ooh, that's a good idea. Yeah, that's a new... I just wonder what figures you would buy that you could actually make the vacuum work. I mean, is that another facility that Hasbro are going to add to the figures? Squeeze the top of the head like toothpaste tube in reverse.
Yeah, it's like a different type of articulation. That's a fact, yeah.
Hasbro, if you're listening, we're just full of it. I mean, ideas, you know.
I'm Gareth Edwards, and you're listening to Fanthatrax Radio.
So, the Friday just gone saw Ewan McGregor appear on the Graham Norton Show on the BBC, and as always, the conversation eventually rolls around to Star Wars. During the conversation, Ewan let slip that the proposed start date for Kenobi is going to be March 2021, which tallies with what we've heard on the rumour mill. Mark, did you manage to catch Ewan on there? What did you think?
Well, one, I think Frank Skinner needs to go and see a doctor because he looked ill.
Yeah.
And what he was doing with his hair, I've got no idea.
I'm glad you mentioned that, because I didn't want to bring it up. But yes, I was so shocked. I mean, they spent a lot of time talking about Alec Guinness's age and like Ewan's age being kind of comparable. I was just sat there thinking, my God, if anybody looks over 60, it's Frank Skinner. Yeah, what happened with lockdown?
What happened? Made me feel old. I know that. Good grief. No, it's great news. I mean, obviously, everything, movies, TV, every other project, High Republic, everything, we'll be talking about that and kind of fodder soon enough. Everything's been shifted back. So obviously, you know, we've essentially lost a year, haven't we, on everything. All the Marvel films have been shoved back. You know, everything's been pushed back. But it's sensible, you know.
And I think so.
The companies that make these films are making huge Well, they're huge investments, but they're also huge gambles, because really there's no guarantee that they'll make the money they need to make. So they've got to play it smart. And of course, we talked last week about Cineworld closing. Well, it hopefully will reopen sort of Easter time, but who knows? For now, they're closing. And, you know, we haven't heard any others closing, but again, we don't know. So it's a very sort of fractious situation. So it's good to know that they are going to be pushing on March next year. I mean, that'll be here before we know it.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
And he seems keyed up for it. Ewan seems genuinely engaged, because it's a funny thing, you know. Now we're in this era where we were, what, 15 years ago, when you got to the end of the prequel trilogy and Ewan was clearly ready to move on. And Natalie had kind of already tapped out, you know, and the actors were ready to leave that behind, because there wasn't exactly the most glowing vibe around the prequel trilogy when it came out, even though they all did great money and Sith did great money and they all did brilliantly and merch was great. The fandom was huge and all of that was great. But you know, it wasn't the original trilogy, was it? And so there was this little sort of pall around it, which was a shame. And it's improved over time. And now here we are in 2020, where Daisy's like, I think I'm done with Rey. And John Boyega's got other things to occupy his mind, as well as his film career. But he's not happy with Lucasfilm and Disney especially. And Oscar Isaac's like, yeah, I'll do another Star Wars film if I need another house. So those guys are just done with it. They're not coming back. It's certainly not in the short term. You step back another 30 years to when Jedi finished and Harrison Ford phoned it in for Jedi, pretty much. Still brilliant because he's Harrison Ford, but he wasn't engaged like he was with the other two films. Mark Hamill was certainly ready to move on and leave it behind, and to a large degree did for many, many years. Carrie was never really focused on her acting anyway. It was almost secondary. She was always more of a writer. So it's happened every trilogy, but now you've got Ewan all these years later is like, well, you know, little kids then are like in their 20s now and they look back fondly on those films. He's where Daisy and John and Oscar will probably be in 20 years' time, and they'll go, wow, so many kids grew up on those movies, and yeah, I'd love to come back and play Poe one more time, or whatever it might be. It's natural, isn't it? You know, you can kind of get beyond that. So it's really nice to see Ewan really up for it. Seems really up for it, genuinely. Like, I'm ready to get back to this character.
Yeah, he does. The time and the distance helps.
Yeah.
And it's only going to take Daisy or something to do a couple of conventions to actually realise the impact that Rey as a character has had on the fandom.
Yeah.
Especially on, to a large degree, the female side of a fandom. But actually, yeah, you know, it would give I'd like to hope, pause to kind of think, well, maybe it's worth having another go. But to be honest, it's like everything. With actors, but I think there's always a risk of getting typecast in a role. And especially, I'd imagine, as a younger actor who does something in a big blockbuster, it's very easy to kind of get probably typecast into that type of role. And if you look at the roles that Daisy has done, they've been totally different, completely opposite ends of the spectrum to Rey and that type of film. So you can kind of understand that. And I guess when you're young and you're hungry and you want to get your teeth stuck into different roles and that, it's probably good to diversify. And that question, she will have that question probably in every single press junket she does for every single release of any new product or any new film that she's part of, I think.
Yeah.
You know, everybody always asks, they're asking Lucas all the time, you know, when's the next Star Wars film coming out? And they ask Harrison Ford and, you know, Mark Hamill, if they were to make a series of films, would they come back? And they did, which is great. But it took time. Yeah, like you said, Mark at one point was really, really not engaging with the fans of the fan base.
I think now for him, it's nice in the sense that he clearly enjoys and he uses social media in the right way. You know, he does engage with the fans on there.
Yes.
I had a like off him this week. What a silly tweet. I put out some dad joke. He likes his silly dad jokes. You know what I mean? So he kind of digs that interaction with people. You know, he does social media in that way and he can step away from it. And it's a good interaction. Harrison Ford doesn't do social media. You know enough about him as a person that it's like, he's not going to be fussed with any of that crap. Daisy did it and got battered. Kelly Marie Tran, who we'll talk about in a bit, she got battered very sensibly, took a moment and thought, it is not worth it. You know, Boyega has always been very good with chatting to people, but he's had so much toxic nonsense on his timeline. He's fired up about it now and you can tell he's irritated by it, you know, which is understandable because we're all busy people, you know, you and me, we ain't Hollywood actors. We're not making millions of pounds for a film, but we're both busy people. And if you got to a point where you're like, I don't need this anymore, you would just step away. And they're in a similar situation where they give of themselves to a film or a TV project and they immerse themselves in it. And then they'll work on promoting it and pushing it and hyping it, which is all part of the same process, really, because it's business, show business. And then they interact with the fans, which again is a reciprocal deal.
Yes.
But I think Daisy and John and Oscar are sort of diverse actors in talent. Oscar Isaac's You know he's going to win an Oscar. Win an Oscar. You know, it's in his future. He's that kind of actor. He'll have a performance in a film that will be like, that's like Godfather level. That's amazing. And Boyega, you can see already he's on that path with Small Axe, which is coming out in December.
That's right,
he's,
yeah.
He's Red, Black and Blue, I think the episode is. You know, he's on the pathway to, you can see him building a very good character actor career, splashing in sort of action roles, you know, kind of like the Star Wars blockbuster thing. You can see that in his future. Daisy, she can sing, so she's got other potential avenues. She does a lot of voice acting as well in computer games and other stuff, so she's got a diverse career ahead of her. And I think I can see her ending up on the stage at some point doing stage, but just in my head thinking that might be something she wants to do. They've all got their sort of individual fandoms. I think they'll all come round to it in time. Like, getting back to the subject matter, like Ewan kind of has, it's took a long time, but now he's looking back going, you know, when I took this role on, I was like 26. What was he when he got the role? He was like 96, so he'd been 25. So I was like 25 when he gets the phone call when he's making Velvet Goldmine and he runs around with his lightsaber in Noel Gallagher's garden, all that silly stories he used to hear. And now he's like 50 nearly. He's like only 13 years younger than Guinness was when he made A New Hope. So, you know what I mean? There's more meat on the bone now to what he's going to do.
Yeah. I mean, it's interesting because the age thing kind of is curious, isn't it? Because we're all looking forward to it, and I've just been rewatching like a ton. I've been really mainlining a load of James Bond films, and I've just kind of been doing all the like Roger Moore films. And I was doing some reading and looking back at some press releases and stuff like that over the course, and like pretty much from, I'd say, like Moonraker, they start.
I knew you were going to say this. I know what you're going to say. Yeah, I knew what you were going to say.
They bring up Roger Moore's age in every single one, and obviously, in some films, the later films, it kind of becomes slightly more apparent. For Your Eyes Only, he has two very kind of young female sidekicks. And then they kind of correct that with Octopussy and bring Maud Adams back, who's kind of like a slightly older, more mature Bond girl.
Yeah.
It's odd that like nowadays that we're happily and we want to embrace more mature actors.
Because Star Wars has been around now for, what, 43 years now? You know, it's got that longevity. You've watched a young Luke. I mean, I think Luke and Leia as characters were both about, well, they'd have both been 19, wouldn't they, at the time of A New Hope, obviously. You know, it's 19 years after Sith, so they were both 19. And you've watched these characters grow through the original trilogy, and obviously not in the prequels until the very, very end, and then come back as the General Dodonna, Mon Mothma, that sort of character in the sequel trilogy, you know. And that was interesting to see. And it worked to lesser or greater effect, and real life got in the way to a huge degree with Carrie's sort of participation, obviously, but all things being equal, it would have played out similarly, I would imagine. And also, sci-fi, I mean, sci-fi has been around since the 30s. You know, we're having Flash Gordon and Buck Rogers on telly, you know, like Republic serial type stuff in the 20s and 30s and 40s and such, and all the way through the sci-fi era of the 50s. We've had it all the way. But I think now, especially with technology making things so much more achievable, and we've talked about it a lot on the show, you know, it wasn't a fine line, it is now, that the line between television and cinema is so thin now. You know, to get an actor, a big actor, you know, when Ewan McGregor turned up on Fargo, it was like, blimey, Ewan McGregor's doing television. And you think back to other actors that when they turned up on a TV show or a TV series, an HBO thing or whatever, and they were a big name actor, you'd be like, blimey, they can't get the roles on the big screen anymore, can they? It must be getting tough for them now. Now you don't, that's not even a thought process now. You know, if Harrison Ford suddenly turned around and says, yeah, I'm doing a TV show, you'd be like, wow, I'm tuning into that. But you wouldn't think times are tough. Yeah, okay, the guy's 80, he's got another indie ahead of him, he's dusting Star Wars. Outside of his Star Wars and indie, Jack Ryan and you know, those sort of roles, he's not a major blockbuster $100 million film guy. He never has been. He's always wanted to be a character actor, and his name takes it so far. And I guess Tom Cruise and Tom Hanks and guys like that, you know, there's no real marquee stars now. I suppose the only one you can really think of, I can think of at the moment, is The Rock. You know, he's the only tentpole name I can think that you think, yeah, if he puts a film out, you're thinking that's a guaranteed, near as damn it guaranteed hit. There's not that many around. There was loads in the 80s. You know, Harrison Ford, Mel Gibson, Kevin Costner, you name it, you could go on all day, you know, the big name actors. But I think with television now, it's a more fertile area for actors to want to come back. You know, and the Meryl Streep thing of, well, when an actress gets to a certain age, she's pretty much done. Thankfully, it feels, with the breadth of dramatic television content out there and the outlets that are there, those actors now have got a much broader field to be able to apply their trade in than they used to. And you saying about the Bond stuff, you know, now if you had a Bond film, you know, if you had a, how old's Daniel Craig? He's about my age, he's about 50, give or take, isn't he?
52. I think he's going to be 52.
There you go. So he's probably, I bet if you did the maths, I bet he's not that much younger than Roger Moore was when he did View to a Kill. But Roger Moore at 50, whatever he was, mid-50s, and Daniel Craig as a guy in his 50s, are light years apart. But that's just life, isn't it?
I mean, you mentioned Tom Cruise. Tom Cruise is kind of in his 50s, I think. So
isn't he 60?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And he's still doing all his stunts. Yeah. So, but yeah, I mean, Roger Moore and Sean Connery, I think, are of the same age. If not, actually, Roger Moore was slightly younger, by a couple of years. So that's just how it is. It's interesting how, age seems to be less relevant these days, but also people just seem to look younger. And obviously, I'm very much aware of the processes that you can do, be it just with makeup or just a little bit of kind of skin smoothing and softening in the grade, take a few years off of people. And that's without the full-on heavy lifting kind of de-aging techniques they've used in stuff like Marvel films and stuff. So I think it's good that we seem to be able to have actors enter these different roles and different avenues which we don't have before. I guess the difference is, when you think about it, it's because there's so much more content out there, which creates a more fertile ground for actors to kind of get their feet under the table and kind of start developing roots. But obviously, as there's more shows and that, there's more actors out there as well, hungry and desperate to kind of take those roles over.
Yeah. And also, I suppose at the moment with everything that's going on, just as a side thought, you've got all those avenues for different networks and your satellite channels, your streaming networks, your cinemas, and all, it grows every day, the outlets that you can put your talents to. But also, stage is pretty much closed at the moment and will be. I mean, Broadway, they've said they're closed till March 21. So there's all the actors that if they're not doing films or TV, then maybe they're working on the stage. So it's a very sort of skewed situation. But just stepping back to Ewan briefly, I think with him, his caliber and his level of fame as an actor, when he came in, he'd not really done much. He'd done Lipstick on Your Collar. He'd done Shallow Grave. I think he'd done he had done Trainspotting. I think he'd done Life Less Ordinary. That was about it, really, for what he'd done of any note. And then he comes into Star Wars, and of course it explodes from there. So he'd got a bit of a resume behind him, but not a huge one. He was a reasonably little known outside of the UK, probably better known to Americans for being the nephew of Dennis Lawson, to be honest, to Star Wars fans. And then his career goes great, and he's had a good career. He's done well and made a big name for himself. So for him to come back, I would imagine he's pretty clued upon what sort of... He wouldn't have just come back and agreed to do this role after, 17 years? He probably filmed Sith in 2003, so 17 years since he's last played the role. Patrick Stewart sort of gap to coming back to Picard, very similar very similar actually. And Patrick Stewart was very involved in the creation of the Picard show, and he wanted to do something different. He didn't want to do Next Gen again.
Yeah, Next Gen.
Exactly, and he wants to be a bit more socially conscious because that's Trek and it's got the purview to do it, which makes sense. And that worked out brilliant, and it was a fantastic show. And Ewan, has probably got the same rub. If they go to Ewan and go, "We want you back as Obi-Wan," and he's like, "Okay, tell me more. What are we going to do? What's the story going to be? I know I'm going to be on Tatooine, but what's the story? Is it just going to be 6 episodes of me kicking off with the Tusken Raiders and beating up Jawas? What's the storyline? No, you're going to be doing this, you're going to be doing that, you're going to meet this guy, that guy." And it feels to me, you've got the Cassian series coming, you've got the Obi-Wan series, which is probably a little bit before that, Solo, sort of 10 to 13 years before Star Wars. That's, you've got all these stories in and around a certain time period, and it almost feels like there's the opportunity for crossover. So I think I wouldn't be surprised if, here's a thought, and I need to bookmark this episode, I'm going to say it. It wouldn't surprise me if Obi-Wan Kenobi was a fulcrum. The whole Bail Organa thing, and Cassian was a fulcrum, and Ahsoka was a fulcrum, and it wouldn't surprise me if Ben was, because they can't just... Well, they can. Of course they can. I'd be surprised if it was just all set on Tatooine. I'd be amazed if he didn't, at some juncture, leave... I think he's still got General Grievous's ship hidden somewhere.
Yeah, I mean, I think we kind of touched on this before, haven't we? But I think now we know that it's going to be a limited series, and it's going to be only, 4 or 6 episodes. Mm. I could actually really see that they don't have him leave Tatooine. But yes, like I think we said before, he's still got to be in touch with Bail Organa to some degree. Although, if he is in touch with Bail Organa, then something's going to happen in this series. There's got to be some kind of breakdown of communication, because it kind of feels like Ben hasn't heard from Bail Organa in a while.
There's so much potential and so much scope for what they could do. That's what I think's exciting about the Kenobi show, is that they could go the route of keeping it all on Tatooine and doing it that way, or they could sort of go, Well, what Ben says and what Ben does are two different things.
Yes.
The perceived wisdom was that he never left Tatooine, and you're kind of going off what he'd said, you know, and the crazy old Ben persona.
And we know for a fact that he's a bit of a liar, let's be fair, because he lies to Luke left, right and centre. So
flexible with the truth, isn't he?
Yes.
Like the good guys always seem to be. I always remember Harry Knowles on Ain't It Cool said it years ago. He says, you know, and it stuck with me ever since, and it was a really good observation. And it was all around the Attack of the Clones script, which I think they leaked. They saw the film before anyone, and there's leaks and all sorts of stuff. Uh-huh. But he said, just remember the bad guys always tell the truth.
Yeah.
And you look at the Dooku speech when Ben is chained up in those sort of energy bonds. Everything Dooku says was right.
Bang on, yeah. What could be quite an interesting dynamic? This story is the story where actually by the end of it, he decides that he can't risk going off planet. For instance, he does go off planet and something happens to Luke. Let's say there's a big Tusken Raider attack on the homestead, something like that. And he kind of comes to realize that actually, no, this is too important. I have to stay. And that's then we're into that point of the Ben Kenobi story where he stays on Tatooine and he really accepts it.
The good thing about this scenario, you know, that post-Revenge of the Sith scenario and the landscape of it is that we're going to learn a lot more about where everything was sort of sitting, because obviously Yoda leaves, goes to Dagobah. There's a reason he's going there, because there's a reason why he's going there. He knows why he wants to go to Dagobah. And obviously they've got to lay low because the Empire's won. The Emperor's won. They've lost. The Jedi are defeated and the Republic's been taken over. Yeah. So they've lost, so they've got to go to ground. But he goes to Dagobah for a reason. Also partly, I think, penance, because guilt. I think, it, you know, you see it at the end of Sith when he dumps into Bail Organa's speeder. You know, you can. It's in his voice. We have royally screwed this up. You know, Mace kind of saw the threat but was not seeing the bigger picture, almost, you know, with Anakin. Obviously there was the fractious relationship with Anakin. So many little clever elements just brilliantly put together by Lucas, and he can still unravel it in different ways, which I think is so much fun. But they were arrogant to the point of being blind to it being right in front of their face. And Yoda at the end is like, you know, he's in that speeder and they're getting on the Tantive V4 and they're about to, you know, they leave and off they go to their separate destinies. That's when Yoda sort of suddenly goes, he has his, you know, the end of The Hangover when he sees all the Polaroid pictures of what actually happened over the credit. Yoda has that kind of hangover moment when he's like, oh, crap, I can see it all now. You know, so I just wonder what sort of, not control, but what sort of influence Yoda has over Ben. Obviously, he's been communing with Qui-Gon, so there's that relationship to explore, and I really hope we hear and see, certainly hear, Liam Neeson, but I'd love to see Liam Neeson. You know what I mean? And Bale's part in it, because Bale's public fronting of still being in the Senate, still being a prominent senator, he's front and centre. He's the face of it all now, all of a sudden, Bail Organa, so I wonder how much more influence he has. So I'd be really fascinated to see all of this.
You're listening to Fantatrax. Flip through the galaxy of literature with Cannon Fodder hosts Ryan Cameron, Matt Booker, Mark Newbold, and Mark Mocaster.
Count me in.
Spin round the rim with Desert Planet Discs, your musical journey through the space lanes with your hosts, Carl Bayless and Greg Robertson.
The hottest tunes this side of Mos Eisley.
Hot day!
Get the latest news, interviews, reviews, and much more on Making Tracks with your hosts, Mark Newbold and Mark Mocaster.
Like an Ewok battle wagon out of control.
Join hosts Claire Henry and a rotating panel of guest hosts for the podcast that's full of hope.
Hope.
Planet Leia.
I love you.
I know.
It's time to head south with the Fantha from Down Under, Adam O'Brien.
Oh, g'day, mate. How you going?
Start your engines with Paul Naylor and Mark Newbold as they lift the hood on starships, airspeeders, swoops, capital ships, and more from across the cosmos. And for everything in one location, daily news, reviews, interviews, podcasts, video and social media feeds, bookmark FanthaTracks.com for Star Wars news 24/7, 365.
Also in the news this week, we saw Kelly Marie Tran catch up with Collider while she was out promoting her new Hulu series, Monsterland. And just like with Ewan McGregor, Collider do get round to asking Kelly Marie if she would reprise her role as Rose Tico. And this is kind of directly in relation to rumours, or I think it's just a statement that director John M. Chu said about how he'd love to do a Disney Plus series based on the further adventures of Rose.
I think he was being cute, because it seems to be back then, about a year ago, it felt like every week there was a new announcement of this person's doing a Star Wars show and this person's doing a Star Wars show. And he just felt like, and I think I could be getting my time wrong, but I think Benioff and Weiss had come off their sort of Star Wars series around about that time after all the Game of Thrones fallout. But yeah, I think he was just chancing his arm a little bit. But yeah, can't blame him. You know, you got to put yourself out there sometimes. But I think it was neat that he sort of picked on Rose as the character that he thought there was some scope to do stuff with. So I don't think there's anything in him doing a series. I don't think that's a thing. Just the fact that he threw it out there as, you know, why not? I think there's some scope to do stuff with the character.
When I read that, I was like, has there been any rumours of a Rose Tico series that I've just missed? And then I was trying to think, actually, what would a Rose Tico series look like? What kind of things would you imagine, or could you imagine the scenario be where you'd actually bring Rose Tico back?
I think because it feels very much like Lucasfilm are, for the time being, letting the sequel trilogy lie.
Yeah.
You know, we've had the three films, we've had Resistance sort of leading up to Force Awakens and sort of overlapping with it in the same sort of way that Camp Cretaceous does for the Jurassic films. Just feels a little bit like they're leaving it alone for a while, let the dust settle, because obviously it's money-wise, financially, monster success, no worries. You know, Rise of Skywalker didn't do as well as they would have liked, clearly just about did what Rogue One did. So it was sort of lessening returns after Force Awakens doing like 2.2 billion and then Last Jedi doing just over half that, and then again Rise of Skywalker dropping off even more, but still, you know, I think they all cost sort of around about 250 to make $1 billion. You're happily, handily in profit, so that wasn't an issue, but the reaction to them was probably of concern. And you know, we've got the Kenobi series we've just talked about, we've got the Cassian series coming, we've got other stuff coming and new films, we don't know when they're set. So it just kind of feels like they're leaving the sequel trilogy alone a little bit, but you've still got, and whilst, you know, the lead actors we've just, again, just talked about, you know, Daisy John and Oscar, clearly happily to move on to other stuff right now, like every other trilogy's actors have happily moved on to other stuff because of typecasting and all that. There are other actors in and around the shows, the films, that you imagine would probably be quite up for doing additional stuff, because then the focus kind of shifts from it being all about Rey and, you know, and Finn and Poe being the sort of the primary, you know, the... You look at the original trilogy and you think, well, Harrison Ford was the star of the original Star Wars trilogy. No, he wasn't. It was Mark Hamill. Harrison Ford was a supporting character in those films. Han Solo was a supporting character. And Finn and Poe are supporting characters. It's not about them. It's about Rey. You know, and Kylo is the primary opposing sort of the other magnet sort of thing. Like Luke was the focus of the original trilogy and Anakin was the focus of the prequel trilogy. You think of Ewan and Liam being the lead characters, but they're the lead actors, but they're not the lead characters. The lead character is Anakin. So it's a similar thing. There's all these other characters that you think, well, you could do something with them. So you brought Beaumont into Rise of Skywalker and you think, well, there's a character there you could do something with. And Rose clearly is a character that she's got this great background history that was built up in and around The Last Jedi, the story of her sister, which we saw, and a background and her sort of worldview, if you like. You know, and her rising through the ranks from being just a general member of the crew,
yeah,
to showing that she's got more about her. She had the chance to show she's got more about her, you know. A lot of other characters could have the chance to show they've got more about them and they never had the opportunity. So I think there's some scope to do stuff with them. I've got ideas about what I would do with Rose, definitely.
What would you do with her?
I think, and I might have said this on the show before, and apologies if I have, I think you could do almost a detective show set in the Star Wars. You know how Kevin Scott does his Vader's Castle stuff for IDW? All set around Vader's Castle. It's all sort of Halloween spooky stuff. We've got the next episode of Cannon Fodder. Hopefully we'll have Nick Brokenshire on, IDW artist and writer, and he's worked on the latest Shadow of Vader's Castle. You know, it's that Halloween-themed thing. It's kind of creepy and eerie. Creepshow sort of slightly left-of-centre horror, but not horror. You know what I mean? It's that vibe. And they've done that really, really well. I think you could do a Star Wars, not military, almost a detective show. Basically, you could do Scooby-Doo Star Wars. And I don't mean it as a comedy. I mean it as a group of people solving crimes. And I think Rose has got that sort of almost like that analytical brain.
With Velma.
That she could figure out She could be a mystery. She could be a detective. And you could have Rose and Beaumont and BB-8. You know, you could have Chewie and they could fly off on the Falcon. You know what I mean? I think you could set up almost a Mystery Machine scenario for them to travel the post-Rise of Skywalker Republic era galaxy solving crimes. You could do something with those characters.
Solving crimes or even, yeah, solving ancient mysteries. I suppose if you tie in the whole Beaumont archaeological thing, oh, let's go to this planet where apparently every year or something they get haunted by this creature or something like that.
Yeah.
You know, obviously, because you said Scooby-Doo, I'm immediately leap into a animated type series. But that could work, I suppose, in its own way. I can remember watching Rise of Skywalker. You know, Beaumont was on screen and I'm just like, who's this guy and all that? And then with the book, it gives a little bit more backstory and a little bit more credibility to him being there rather than just the fact that the actor was kind of mates with JJ or, you know, lobbied JJ to kind of get him into the film.
They had some bet or something, didn't they, over a football match or something like that.
Yeah, that's right. So, but I suppose the question is how much of Rose's story have we yet to really find out about? I mean, because her backstory and at least her relationship with her sister kind of gets explored a little bit in, I'm thinking it's Cobalt Squadron. I think there's scope to do something with the Tico sisters earlier on, but at the same time, it's something post Rise of Skywalker, and that is the one era that I'm really super curious about now, is actually what does a post Rise of Skywalker Star Wars era look like.
I think it'd be fascinating because it's learning from the lessons of history sort of scenario, isn't it? Because you had the post Empire galaxy, which is where Poe Dameron Freefall kind of sits in that sort of between Jedi and Force Awakens.
Yeah.
You know, the Republic wants to demilitarize, but the bad guys have kind of disappeared and sort of rejigging their forces. And you now know Palpatine was doing stuff on Exegol and all these things are happening way out in the sort of left-hand side of the map that nobody ever bothers to
go visit,
and chart. Yeah. You know, so there's all this stuff happening out there and the galaxy is kind of blithely walking into this trap almost that it doesn't know it's walking into. And you think now, a savvy and it's just going to be how the Star Wars galaxy will always be. I think if we're still doing this podcast in 30 years time, which would be great if we were,
amazing,
you know, wouldn't it? You know, and we're still talking about Star Wars and we're like so many X amount of trilogies or movies or TV series on, and I think you'd find that we'll be going, and then the war ended and then there was a period of peace and then the next thing kicked off. You know, whatever it might be, I don't think they'll ever. They just won't, because there's too many moving parts. And it kind of makes me think, too many moving parts, about, you mentioned Beaumont coming into the story. And yeah, we know there's a real world reason of JJ wanted one of his mates in there. Why not? He's the director, he's the writer, he can do what he wants. And he brings this character in. And Rose as a character didn't get anywhere near as much screen time in that film as the Last Jedi. Partly because she was not anywhere near as integral to the plot in Rise of Skywalker as she was definitely integral to the plot in Last Jedi. That was her film, if you like, which is fine. But the point being is, you know, there's real world reasons why she was less present in that film, because they tied her up with Carrie and certain effects didn't work and all the different things that they said. And it just takes me back to Lucas years and years and years ago, like way back when the criticism for him really started, which was ridiculous. And he said, you know, a director has 1,000 decisions to make every day. And if he gets 999 right, people will only focus on the one he got wrong. And it's like, you know, with a movie production, there's so many things happening at the same time that it's just, there's not a computer in the world big enough to time it so everything works perfectly. It is literally, yeah, you wear the blue dress and you put the pink hat on and film it. And then somebody 6 months later goes, she wore a green hat in the previous scene and a pink dress and you got it. You know what I mean? It's that sort of thing. So, you know, I guess there's always that retcon thing. Mm. But I think with Beaumont, there's more stuff we could talk about. But definitely, if they said to Kelly Marie, we'd love you to come back for a Disney Plus series, you know, 6 episodes a year or whatever it might be, and we're going to do something with Rose, and she's like, yeah, I'd love that. You know, because if you're doing 6 episodes a year, it means you can still go off and do your Monsterland thing, you can go off and do your, you know, the animated stuff that she's got coming up, the Disney Dragon thing, you know. It would work for everyone, and it would definitely hit a demographic and do what you just said about giving us some post-Rise of Skywalker stuff, because I'm fascinated by how the galaxy's, not just the characters, I'm happy that where the characters are, what the galaxy's going to be like.
Exactly, yeah, because, I mean, when you think about it, at the end of Rise of Skywalker, there's no kind of, like, overarching government, either, you know, at the New Republic, because that's been obliterated.
Totally,
there's no First Order, because that's been obliterated. We believe.
Yeah.
And same with the Final Order.
Yeah.
Really.
Yeah.
You know, you talk about a lawless kind of like galaxy. That is probably equally as lawless, if not more, than after Return of the Jedi, where you kind of still had remnants of the Empire and you had the Alliance trying to kind of convert itself into an actual functioning government. So it could even spiral out into more kind of like lawless thing. And actually, maybe what you'd find is the planets kind of go, you know what, a centralized kind of system of government just doesn't work, and we've just got to go back to kind of local governance, and that could create interesting kind of like alliances. And I guess almost my turn to apologize for bringing up Star Trek, where you kind of end up having like Klingon Empire and the Romulan Empire and the Federation, as it were. But you could almost end up with a situation like that, where you've got three or four or five different factions that have got different vested interests, which are all trying to obviously steal a little bit of territory or kind of like subvert another government and all that. And that could create a really interesting dynamic, because with Star Wars, it's always been fairly kind of binary. It's always been Empire versus the Rebels, or the Resistance versus the First Order, or Resistance versus the Final Order. Whereas you add in an extra couple of parties and suddenly the whole thing destabilizes.
I think it could be fascinating. I love that thought. I mean, you look back at some of the previous history of the galaxy, which is probably Legends now, but, you know, you had the Infinite Empire and you had the Ratican Empire, and you had all these different, and the galaxy was a lot smaller then because they hadn't sort of gone on the expansion crazily. And the Outer Rim planets were out on their own, which they've kind of always been anyway, really. Even in the height of the Republic, that's why the High Republic, they put the scroll out, you know, and they sort of build this new station that's a beacon of hope for the galaxy, you know, because they've built it in the Outer Rim. Yeah, whoop-de-doo. And so it's that Shmi says it in Phantom Menace. No, the Republic doesn't exist out here. So you've got this, what you consider to be a galaxy-spanning government that really isn't. And I think you're right. I think, yeah, you look at I love the Star Trek galaxy map. You know, you look at, you know, Alpha Quadrant, Beta, Gamma, Delta. But, you know, half of the Beta Quadrant is the Romulans, and the Klingons have got their big chunk of the Borg away over in the Delta Quadrant, and the Dominion in the Gamma Quadrant. And there's these enclaves of control and power, and of course the Federation's the Alpha Quadrant, a sizable chunk of it. And it could be really interesting if, post Rise of Skywalker, where would a new Republic, a genuine new Republic, because like you say, they got wiped out in Force Awakens, so they're pretty much gone. The Resistance would de facto, I guess, become sort of a government, but where would they want to put their focus? Because we never saw Coruscant in the sequel trilogy, so we don't know what's going on there. And you kind of, part of you thinks, well, Coruscant's the capital of the galaxy. They're going to want to run it from Coruscant, aren't they? Because, you know, post Return of the Jedi, you think, well, okay, the Empire's been largely defeated. We know that the war carried on after Endor. Endor was just the big sort of final kick, and it fractured the Empire enough that they weren't in control like they were before. But the Senate had only been dissolved in Star Wars. That's only 4 years before. So to get the machines of that up again and running in the Senate is quite feasible. You know, you could see how a New Republic could kind of kickstart that reasonably quickly. Now they've got the galaxy back to the large degree. And we saw it at the end of the special edition, didn't we? Pulling the Palpatine statue down and all that sort of stuff. So you kind of think, well, they've got that back. And they try and build out from the centre. But building out from the centre before took thousands of years. They never controlled the whole of it. So you think, well, would they want to run from there? They didn't run the New Republic from Coruscant, did they?
I think it's in the Aftermath books. We might have actually been in Bloodlines, but they basically talk about the seat of the Senate, or the home of the Senate, would move around from planet to planet. But at the time, it was on Hosnian Prime. But that would suggest that at one point or other, it probably could go back to Coruscant, or it would go back to a similar kind of planet. Because I guess it's got to be somewhere which has got the infrastructure for all those bureaucrats and everything else.
Yeah. And you look at, I mean, just from a film point of view, you look at Hosnian Prime and you think, if you didn't know better, you'd think it was Coruscant, wouldn't you?
Oh, yeah, totally. I mean, you know, until they said it wasn't Coruscant, you kind of think that was Coruscant.
But you just wonder, in that post Rise of Skywalker, because all the focus is on Rey and Kylo. Kylo's faded into the Force now. He's done. As far as I would imagine, he's fulfilled his destiny, been accepted back into the Force, become a Force ghost if that's his destiny, or just fades into the Force like most of the Jedi do.
Brought balance back into the Force.
So, you know, that works. But like I said, the wider galaxy. And so to have stories of, going back to Rose, to have a Rose series, a bit like Cassian. Cassian's the focal character, but I think it's more about the era. I think you could have a Rose series that's yeah, your focus is detective stories and you're flying around the galaxy solving mysteries or whatever. You know, I'm picking that. It's a bit glib, you know, detective, Scooby, whatever. But, you know, that sort of job where you're travelling around for whatever reason, the backdrop of the galaxy could be really, really interesting. So I think she'd be an interesting character to follow through that.
Okay, so I guess we'll have to wait and see if Rose is going to fly around in a mystery machine or if anything's going to come of it. But yeah, it definitely sounds like there's stuff that we could do. But I think we should probably wrap this episode up. Let's stick a pin in it and call it episode 58. But if you have any kind of comments or questions, and we do like questions, Mark's going to tell you how you can get in touch with us.
I am. Here's how you can get in touch with us. First things first, we want and need some listeners' questions. So any questions, we've really rabbited on today about all sorts of stuff and gone down every avenue possible. So if there's any thoughts you've got, any queries, any questions or statements, whatever, send them in. Happily, we'll talk about anything. But if you want to be part of the action and stay updated on all the latest Star Wars news, visit FanthaTracks.com or check out the FanthaTracks app through the App Store to follow us on your mobile device. You can reach out to us and send in your listeners' questions, those listeners' questions we need so much, by emailing radio@FanthaTracks.com. Comment, like and share on any of our social media feeds at FanthaTracks, and be sure to subscribe and leave a review, please, a 5-star one if you do it, on Amazon Music, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, or your podcatcher or smart speaker of choice. And as always, thanks to James Temple for composing the FanthaTracks intro, Adam O'Brien for our making tracks opening music, and Mark Daniel and Vanessa Marshall for our voiceovers. So episode 58 is in the can. Are we going to do this again next week, Mark?
I think so, but I would have got away with it if it wasn't for you pesky kids.
Coming up next on FanthaTracks Radio, it's Cannon Fodder.
Don't be shaggy.